Last year, I preached a sermon titled Seneca Falls, Selma, Stonewall, claiming our social justice story, in which I invited us to reflect on the legacy of social justice activism that is ours if we claim it. Our Unitarian and Universalist forebears were leaders and allies in the movements for women's rights, for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights, and for racial equality, and those struggles continue to today. And today, in the 50th anniversary month of the Selma to Montgomery marches, one of the core questions that I'll be inviting us to reflect on is when injustices happen and as we become increasingly aware of them, will we stand up? Will we speak up? Will we show up? To begin to set the stage historically, when you think about those three protest marches that went from Selma, it wasn't just because Montgomery was the state capital. There's also that historic resonance that 10 years before March of 1965 and December 1st of 1955, Rosa Parks had refused to give up her seat in Montgomery, launching the Montgomery bus boycotts. And although the Supreme Court had declared, well, Doug actually showed us that sequence pretty powerfully, that what happened in the 40s with integrating the armed forces and people seeing that equality was possible and not just theoretical, and then in the 50s with Brown versus the Board of Education in 54 and Brown 2 in 55 saying integration must happen with all deliberate speed, it's still 10 years later. There was much to be done. You know, even a year later, in 55, the schools may have been declared desegregated, but the buses weren't. And then 10 years later, in nearby Selma, was at the center of some of the worst ongoing racially motivated violence and voter discrimination. On the third attempt of this march from Selma to Montgomery, the nonviolent protesters were finally able to complete the 54-mile walk. It took them from March 21st to March 25th. But the first two marches were stopped short and became known as Bloody Sunday and Turnaround Tuesday. Bloody Sunday, March 7th, 1965, was 50 years ago yesterday. Turnaround Tuesday is 50 years ago tomorrow. How many of you watched President Obama's speech in front of the Edmund Pettus Bridge? So just a few of you. I really do encourage you to go home and to Google the transcript to that speech or to Google the video of that speech. It's a really powerful speech, easily the most powerful and compelling speech on race that President Obama has given since he was candidate Obama and not President Obama. I also encourage UU congregations are doing a Selma Sunday, as we are. Many individual UUs have made a pilgrimage to Selma to be part of a conference that is the 50th anniversary of the Selma Voting Rights Campaign. If this sermon leaves you interested in learning more, I encourage you to go home and go to uulivinglegacy.org or just Google UU Living Legacy if that's easier to remember. And many of the presentations and parts of that conference are available free online. I also recommend the book by one of our best and most compelling UU historians, Mark Morrison Reed, called The Selma Awakening, How the Civil Rights Movement Tested and Changed Unitarian Universalism. It's only about 200 pages. It's very accessible. Has anybody already read that book? It's been out a little while, so I would be surprised, but it's quite excellent and really worth your time and challenging. The invitation of all of this is to reflect on the past to inform our present and future. And one of the core questions, as I said earlier, that I will be inviting us to reflect on is when injustice happens, will we stand up? Will we speak up? And will we show up? To begin with the past, early in the morning of Monday, March 8th, 1965, the morning just hours after Bloody Sunday, early in the morning of that Monday, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. sent this telegraph. In the vicious maltreatment of defenseless citizens of Selma, where old women and young children were gassed and clubbed at random, we have witnessed an eruption of the disease of racism that threatens to destroy all of America. All are involved in the sorrow that rises from Selma and threatens to contaminate every crevice of our national life. The people of Selma will struggle on for the soul of this nation, but it is fitting that all Americans help bear this burden. I call, therefore, on clergy of all faiths, representative of every part of this country, to join me in a minister's march to Montgomery on Tuesday morning, March 9th. So, you know, this is all happening. He's sending this telegram out early Monday morning, and he's saying, get in your car now. Get in a plane now for a march that's happening Tuesday. And he continued, in this way, all of America will testify to the fact that the struggle in Selma is for the survival of democracy everywhere in our land. 2 years earlier, in August of 1963, 1,600 UUs had shown up for the March on Washington for jobs and freedom, including members of this congregation. The next year, in 1964, saw the passage of the Civil Rights Act, which UUs helped lobby for. However, as the recent film Selma powerfully showed, intense voter discrimination and racially targeted violence continued after the 1964 Civil Rights Act. So Dr. King and others were saying, more is needed now. Johnson, however, President Johnson, after having just passed that major piece of voter legislation, and a racial justice legislation and having other legislative priorities, was reluctant to use political capital to pass another racial justice bill so quickly. So the Selma to Montgomery marches were planned to help create the political will to convince Johnson that no, change was needed immediately. But the protesters were met on Bloody Sunday, 50 years ago yesterday, by brutal violence. Billy clubs, cattle prods, clouds of tear gas that were also caught on film and televised across the nation. But all of that violence was coordinated by the white power establishment run by the county sheriff. As images of these horrific attacks were seen across the country, again, Dr. King's telegram was dispatched early the next morning. As one person who responded wrote, before 2 days were out, approximately 60 UU ministers had made the pilgrimage to Selma. Nearly 10% of our active parish ministry. He writes, I was unutterably proud of our presence, but there was no time for pride. We had come because we had to, and we became increasingly aware that we had also come very, very late. The first voter registration drive was in 1952. They were beaten into submission, beaten on street corners, on the steps of the courthouse, in their own churches, and even in their own homes, and we had not noticed. Ultimately, in addition to many other clergy and laity from many other faith groups, as many as 250 UU ministers and hundreds of lay people made the journey from Selma to Montgomery. Others led demonstrations in their local communities. Morrison Reed in the Selma Awakening does a masterful job of tracing the intricate web of all of the lives that intersected in Selma and Montgomery. But for now, allow me to focus on one that Janet mentioned earlier, the Reverend James Reeb. Reeb was originally from Kansas and had been ordained as a Presbyterian minister, but his passion for social justice increasingly led him to switch his affiliation to Unitarian Universalism. He served for 3 years as the assistant minister of All Souls Church Unitarian here in Washington, D.C. That's where Janet met him, before moving to Boston in 1964 to work on the ground for housing desegregation. He and his wife Marie had 4 children, the youngest of whom was an infant when that telegram came that fateful Monday morning from Dr. King. But whereas James and Marie had walked together proudly on that march on Washington 2 years earlier, Marie strongly objected to James going to Selma after having seen the Bloody Sunday footage. Nevertheless, Reeb felt called to show up. His conscience would not allow him to stay at home while human beings in his country were being treated so cruelly. He felt a powerful urge of conscience to be in solidarity with them. And he was present for Turnaround Tuesday when the protesters turned around on that second attempt at marching to Montgomery, choosing to wait for a protective court order. But that evening, after dinner at a locally integrated restaurant with some fellow UU ministers, Reeb and 2 others were attacked by some local white segregationists, and Reeb suffered a severe blow to the head from a large club, probably a pipe. He died two days later in the hospital. He was 38 years old. President Lyndon Johnson called Marie Reeb to offer his condolences. That Saturday, the UUA Board of Trustees was holding its regularly scheduled meeting in Boston. They voted to adjourn and to reconvene immediately the next day in Alabama. They showed up. That Monday, a memorial service was held for Reverend Reeb. Dr. King preached the eulogy, which included these words. His crime was that he dared to live his faith. He placed himself alongside the disinherited black brethren of this community. James Reeb could not be accused of being only concerned for justice for Negroes away from home. He and his family live in Roxbury, Massachusetts, a predominantly black community. They devoted their lives to aiding families in low-income areas. King went on to ask, "Who killed James Reeb?" And he answered, "A few sick, demented, misguided men." But then he asked, "What killed James Reeb?" He answered, "An indifferent ministry, an irrelevant church, irresponsible politicians, a law enforcement establishment embracing lawlessness in the name of the law, a timid federal government, and cowardly black men and women standing on the sidelines." But as important as it is to remember the martyrdom of James Reeb for racial justice and the difference it made that the nation woke up with the brutal attack on this white minister, we need to consider as well this passage from the sermon preached at the UU Church of Birmingham that Sunday. "Another man died in Selma, within the same social context, shot by a state trooper in an atmosphere of violence. His name was Jimmie Lee Jackson. But nobody really cared or got upset when Jimmie Lee Jackson died. He, though, was a human being, just as James Reeb was a human being, just as you and I are. But here's the tragedy. For implicit in the lack of the response of the government and of the people was that just another black man had died." We should remember as well the memory of Viola Liuzzo, a Unitarian Universalist laywoman and mother of five who was shot by white segregationists as she was driving protesters who had marched to Montgomery back to Selma after the successful Third March. But the important difference has been shown powerfully in a short film by the New York Times, I'll link as well to that in the manuscript of this sermon, is that President Johnson received 57 phone calls from influential people expressing concern that James Reeb had died, this UU clergy person who was white. In contrast, the murder of Jimmie Lee Jackson, a black man who was the inspiration for the Selma to Montgomery marches and for saying we need to march on what turned out to be Bloody Sunday, that received almost no national attention. When Johnson gave his historic speech asking for the passage of the Voting Rights Bill, he invoked the name of the white minister, James Reeb, instead of the black man, Jimmie Lee Jackson. And with the support of a galvanized nation now behind it, the Voting Rights Bill was signed into law on August 6, 1965. In 1967, Dr. King noted, "The failure to mention Jimmie Jackson only reinforced the impressions that to white Americans, the life of the Negro is insignificant and meaningless." And although it is reprehensible that all white juries swiftly acquitted the murderer of Reeb and the murderer of Liuzzo, Jimmie Lee Jackson's murderer was not even indicted, giving horrifying echoes that continue today in the wake of the deaths of Michael Brown, Eric Garner, and so many other people of color. And when we hear objections today to the Black Lives Matter movement saying that we should instead say all lives matter, well, of course all lives matter and have inherent worth and dignity. That's at the core of our beliefs. But the history of racial injustice in this country shows that we must stand up, speak up, and show up in particular for the continuing discrimination against people of color in this country. Along these lines, I cannot recommend strongly to you enough Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, Mass Incarceration in an Age of Colorblindness. As she and others have shown, there is tremendous racial bias in our criminal justice system. I've preached a sermon on that previously that's in our archive that gives many more details. I'll give you just one data point for this morning. There are more black men under correctional control today than there were under slavery in 1850. There are more black men under correctional control today than were enslaved in 1850. I'm reminded of the realization I shared earlier of the UU minister who arrived in Selma 50 years ago, feeling a tension between his pride that so many UUs had showed up to stand up against racial injustice, as well as his increasing realization that white UUs were really also late to a brutal struggle for human dignity that had been actively going on for more than a decade. Today, we should be proud of the UUs and other progressive activists around the country who have been waking up and acting up for justice, for racial justice, particularly since the death of Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, last August. But Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Tamir Rice, and Eric Garner are only a few names in the ocean of victims of racial injustice in this country, and that call on us to join the struggle for peace, liberty, and justice, not just for some and not just for a few, but for all. When we come to increasing awareness of injustice, will we stand up? Will we speak up? Will we show up? Many Unitarian Universalists did show up for the civil rights movement, just as our forebears were leaders in the abolitionist and women's rights movements. The social justice legacy that they helped shape is now ours, and our invitation and challenge is to show up in the ongoing struggle for social, economic, and environmental justice. For now, I'll leave the last words to that UU historian, Mark Morrison Reed, from the conclusion of his book, The Selma Awakening, about the legacy of Selma for us 50 years later. Unitarian Universalists did not know that Selma would be a pivotal moment in our history, but called, sent, drawn, compelled, hundreds responded. And when they left, they had two UU martyrs in their hearts, and they had a new confidence and conviction in their stride. It is not possible nor necessary to know in advance what the outcome of our actions for social justice will be. Therefore, we act in faith. Faith asks not that we succeed, but that we try. And we try because we yearn to live our values. Conscience urges us on, for we have dreamed of a better and more just tomorrow. We care, therefore we act, and in acting we risk having our hearts broken 1,000 times. Therefore, we are sustained by hope. That is the price that those who cleared the way for us accepted. It is what living fully, freely, and with integrity demands. May we be known as a people who, when we become aware increasingly of injustice, may our children and our grandchildren look back on us and say, we have inherited, we are from a people who showed up, who spoke up, who stood up. May it be so.